6:06 on the Central Coast. I'm Dave Congleton, welcoming you back to Hometown Radio on this Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. Thanks again to Jeff Osland for joining us. Our next candidate will be Friday. Stu Jenkins, County Clerk Recorder candidate, will be with us. And then I think we've got only three or four more to do, but we're committed. We're going to give you all the candidates. All we ask is that you take the time to vote on June 7th. Last night during the 6 o'clock hour, we had a conversation with Michael Boyer from the Diversity Coalition of Slo County about the tragic shooting in Buffalo. And if you missed that conversation, podcast is up at 920kvec.com. I'm glad that we had the conversation, and we may return to that subject at some point. Tonight, I'm not interested in talking about the shooting. I'm not interested in talking about the shooter or Buffalo itself. I want to address the larger issue, and that is how we respond to this tragedy. And in this specific case, the governor of New York, Hochul, I believe is how she pronounces her name, she's already made some statements. Bloomberg News, New York Governor Kathy Hochul called on social media companies to do more to crack down on racist, anti-immigrant, and anti-Semitic rhetoric on their platforms, saying the man accused of shooting and killing 10 people in a Buffalo supermarket was radicalized online. And it goes on to point out that the shooter had posted a white supremacist manifesto online. The governor claimed that the shooter had developed his hatred by reviewing and seeing radical content on social media. And quoting the governor, "This spreads like a virus, and that's why I'm calling on the CEOs of all social media platforms to examine their policies and to be able to look me in the eye and tell me that everything is being done that they can do to make sure this information is not being spread." With that in mind, always a pleasure to be in conversation with Dr. Larry Martinez. He joins us once again. Larry, good evening.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Larry, for taking the time. And we'll include phone calls here in a little bit. I guess I just start with the general. And as a reminder, to what extent are these social media platforms, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, are they regulated by government currently? Or does it vary from platform to platform?
Well, you know, it's a very big question that you're asking there, because the advent of new technologies create new spaces for interactivity, let's say. And oftentimes these are creating new areas of activity that have not been adequately addressed by the regulatory, let's say, efforts of governments at all levels that typically will step in as the need is expressed by users, by producers, by consumers, and so forth, that a form of regulation is required. So you have, you know, many, many examples of new things, and these new things require new regulation. So, for instance, tomorrow I'm getting on a big airplane and flying away. And if you look back 100 years, and it's very instructive to look at, the new thing was this new technology called airplanes.
Yep.
And you could, and first they put bombs on them and weapons in World War One that really, let's say, expanded the industry and the technology and so forth. And then with these new airplanes that were developed for wartime, they figured out that instead of carrying bombs, you can carry passengers, and you can carry the United States mail, and you can do all sorts of things by having this machine that allows you to hop over mountains and to go over state boundaries that previously were really big things. You know, a territorial state was really big, but with an airplane moving at hundreds of miles an hour, suddenly the states of the United States became small.
Yep.
And then you had to have some sort of regulatory mechanism in there. And we as the voters of the United States. We elected representatives to Congress. We elected presidents, and they passed legislation, and it regulated this new industry. And every once in a while, something new comes along. So, for instance, the supersonic airliner came along with the Concorde that produced very, very loud sonic booms, and we had to regulate that. And so, for instance, the Concorde was not allowed to fly over populated areas. Well, okay, now in electronics, the same thing analogously is going on with the advent of solid state, which are the transistors, you know, as we move from vacuum tubes, which are very big hogs on electricity and heat and so forth, that really limited their applicability to doing the type of digital computing. But with the advent of the large-scale integrated chip, in the early 1970s, suddenly all this new activity you could do in what we call the online environment. And so what we have is a big, big industry of these big tech companies that are operating in an area that is not fully regulated and defined [S2] Yep. [S1] Legally. It's not fully defined, for instance, what the boundaries are, what the jurisdictions are, and so forth. Let me give you an example. In the 1990s, there was this company called eBay. eBay comes along, and another company, it was called Amazon. And eBay and Amazon perfected the electronic online business directly to customers. And this was also not fully defined because the wires and the communications were going over state boundaries. Normally, the states regulate commerce within their territory. And they wanted to really promote online e-commerce, as it was called. And they said, well, you don't really have to pay state sales tax if you're not operating in that state, if you're just selling. And so for years, people flocked to the online vendors because you could buy something online, and the sales tax regulations of various states were not being enforced. So you got an automatic, here in California, most places, 7.75% sales tax, or whatever the sales tax of your vicinity is. And that was a huge promotion of the online business, which a lot of people supported because they said that this is something the United States economy needs, and it really is going to promote economic growth.
Right.
But it required a resetting of the regulation.
Yes, but in this case in particular, I see, Larry, there are two parts to this. One is everything that happened before the shooting, meaning people going online and being basically indoctrinated in this so-called hate. I mean, that's a whole discussion. And then there's what happened afterwards, meaning the kid went in and he live streamed it. And to the credit, I think it was Twitch, shut it down immediately within 2 minutes, which seems fast, but it wasn't fast enough because people were able to make copies. And now millions of people have seen that clip online because that's just the way it's going right now.
Yeah, and so you have to ask, okay, who has the responsibility to control that content?
Exactly.
All right, who has that responsibility? First, you may want to ask the more fundamental question is, should that content be controlled by somebody? All right, by some entity? And this is this ill-defined area, just like what I was talking about before with these other new technologies. Here's a new technology that means that, for instance, is anybody saying all the social media should never show any video from the war in Ukraine because what you're watching people dying in Ukraine.
Right.
And it happens to be politically that, okay, the vast majority, I think, of the public opinion in the United States supports Ukraine because it was the country that was, according to the majority opinion, I think, the majority opinion feels that Russia illegally invaded Ukraine. So and you can go anywhere on TikTok, on any of these social media platforms, YouTube, and watch videos of Russian soldiers being killed. All right? Anybody can do that.
Right.
Why is that allowed when killing is killing? If human lives are being terminated in some fashion, why is one killing allowed to be viewed on a electronic platform and another not allowed?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the distinction between that? It's like I often ask my students in international law, what's the difference between murder and killing? What's the difference between what it says in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill? Does that mean that the Ten Commandments are against defending your homeland against an aggressor? These are very big questions.
All right. There's no question, though, that we need to take a break as we continue our conversation. Dr. Larry Martinez, the governor of New York, in response to the tragedy out of Buffalo and other tragedies around the country, wants to crack down on social media. What are the challenges that she and others face? We'll give more details as we continue. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. Larry Martinez will also help you start packing, but he'll probably charge you a little bit more. We are in conversation with Dr. Martinez, and we are talking about social media in light of the role that it apparently played in the tragic shootings in Buffalo. 10 people dead, 3 people wounded. The shooter indoctrinated online, and then the whole online response. Larry, as we're back with you, realistically, what can the governor of New York do about social media? How much power does she have?
Well, in this case, or in cases similar to this where it deals with a media company, and our social media companies, and this is part of the ill-defined regulatory structure we still have with these new technologies. Basically, it's the federal government, because all of these technologies cross state lines. And so if it crosses a state line, it falls under the purview of the federal government, whose role it is to harmonize business relationships between the states. So that's why we only have one currency in the United States, and there is a specific power given under Article 1, Section 8 in the enumerated clause for interstate commerce. And so, basically, it's the Federal Communications Commission. It has the more direct, let's say, regulatory role for communication companies. Now, within a state, the governor certainly has emergency police powers. And so, if there is, for instance, an uprising, the governor is, by the constitutional role of that state, is in charge of the National Guard
right.
of that state. But in this case, a company is operating in the state, and the state has a regulatory role for the intrastate commerce. And so, for instance, Texas, Governor Abbott of Texas, doesn't like the fact that some social media platforms have taken people off their platforms. And Governor Abbott, I hear, is trying to have Texas pass a law that would reduce the ability of social media platforms to take anyone off the platform. Now, this is all into the area of what is the First Amendment rights of a private commercial entity. And so you then start going off into the area of First Amendment questions, which is where Congress shall pass no law respecting the freedom of the press. Now, that says Congress shall pass no law respecting freedom of the press, which means that governments, that is, a state government or the federal government, has a much more restricted ability to, let's say, monitor and control content. And so the Federal Communications Commission has always been very reluctant to get into the regulatory role of telling, for instance, broadcast media what they can and cannot do. Because they feel that, and the court rulings are very much in favor of the First Amendment and a reduced role of government to control content. When you talk about, the way to think about social media in this case is more like a giant newspaper. A giant newspaper is privately owned, and it is the publisher. It's the intrinsic right of the publisher, the owner of the newspaper, to control all the content of that newspaper.
Right.
Okay? Does the owner of the social media platform have the same rights as a newspaper publisher? And here's where it gets into the gray area. The gray area is that, remember I was talking a few minutes ago about efforts to promote electronic commerce, e-commerce. And so they didn't enforce the normal regulations for charging a state sales tax.
We have 1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute. The same thing applies here, because in the mid-1990s, Congress passed a law called the Communications Decency Act, and in that law there's a section 230 which specifically exempts social media platforms from most regulation. There you go. That's it.
You know,
so it's on section 230 that these platforms really are outside most government regulation.
Yeah. And something we can pursue after the news break. We've been talking a lot on this show, Larry, about books being banned and parents concerned about what their kids are reading in school and whether or not they're prepared for sexuality. I argue that they should be paying more attention to what their kids are reading online at home, because I think that the stuff online is far more dangerous than any book they're going to find in the library. So I want to pursue that with you. And also welcome your phone calls and text messages for Dr. Martinez. We've got news and traffic and weather and more of our conversation. We're live, we're local. This is the Dave Congleton Show. You have landed on the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show, where tomorrow during this time slot, Larry's partner in crime, Dr. James Armstead, will join us to give us the very latest analysis on the Ukrainian situation. As we continue, though, with Dr. Martinez, we are talking about social media and the governor of New York, who, in the aftermath of the tragic Buffalo shooting, has said that we must do more to curtail social media, curtail the abuses, and hold them accountable. Dr. Martinez is explaining the challenges that the governor or others would face. If you want in on the conversation, join us, 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. Larry, let's hit the Stolberg text line, please. Text number one, listener writes, if European nations can regulate social media, why can't the United States?
Well, the European nations do not have the courts and the same, let's say, legislative and judicial history behind the First Amendment as you have in the United States. And so you have a different tradition in the European countries where broadcasting back in the early 20th century came to the proverbial fork in the road. In the United States, we took the fork in the road towards commercialization of broadcast media and telecommunication companies. And in Europe, they went, they took the other fork in the road, and they went to what was a governmental broadcasting and telecommunications monopoly. So, for instance, in Britain, you have the BBC, which is owned and operated by the British government, and all the telephones were owned and operated by the British government. In the United States, the phones were owned and operated by a private company, American Telephone and Telegraph, and the broadcast media, you know, ABC, CBS, and NBC were all private companies, and that's the reason.
Text number two on the Stolberg line. When it comes to social media, I don't see how it can be successfully regulated because it's like a runaway train, but at the same time, it's the last bastion of free speech, which creates a real predicament.
Yeah, the that text perfectly lines up the dilemma because how do you, let's say, maintain a freedom-loving society which emphasizes freedom of speech? But at the same time, there has to be some order to all of this. Otherwise, it's mob rule. And so, for instance, it's similar to the dilemma facing people trying to deal with the homeless crisis. How much freedom of choice do we give people to choose a particular style of living? And at the same time, where does the line, where is it crossed, where somebody's choice of a lifestyle interferes with the greater community interests in having order and safety and security? And so this is the same for the media. And so, it's a dilemma.
805-543-8830. Or 800-549-5832 if you want to end the conversation with Dr. Martinez. Quoting the Washington Post, this is an editorial they issued today. The alleged gunman in Saturday's mass shooting in Buffalo had a chilling explanation for sharing his racist rampage in real time. Quote, live streaming this attack gives me some motivation in the way that I know that some people will be cheering for me. That's pretty chilling, Larry.
Well, it reminds me, it's, you know, there are people out there who have these ideas. For instance, Charles Manson Group, they were attempting to start a race war with their murders, and they painted on the walls slogans and so forth, trying to make it look as if these murders were done in a racist way. What social media do that is revolutionary in the sense of the business model, and what we should really focus on here is follow the money. And if you follow the money, social media is a big, big business that lives off of conflict. And the more they get conflict between human beings with different ideas, the more engagement they get and the more behaviors they can track to sell to advertisers. And so you always have to watch out because the temptation always is to look at the content of the social media, and especially with regard to a tragedy like what just occurred. Right. But on a deeper sense, you got to look at the business model that is weaponizing conflict in this society.
All right, let's take a call. We've got Paul in San Luis. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Larry.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah. Hold on. You know, long ago, the Supreme Court determined that there's a limit to free speech. And that, what they used as an example is yelling, screaming fire in a burning theater, or
crowded
screaming
theater.
Fire in a theater.
Right.
And to me, a lot of what's going on social media is the equivalent of that. And, you know, this guy is a perfect example of, oh, darn it. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought my phone died.
No, you're good.
But, yeah. No, this guy, I mean, here he was, probably a marginal character, and, you know, had some mental issues. And, you know, maybe if he didn't hear a lot of the garbage, you know, that about these racists, he wasn't exposed to some of these racist ideas, maybe he would have gone on to live a normal life and those 10 people wouldn't be dead.
Let's hear from Larry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is how social media and its business model takes advantage of this technology. And what it does is that normally a deranged individual with out of the acceptable range of ideas, normally these are a very small minority of society. And so they live in a town or a city, and they're a very small minority. And polling and surveys that they do show that the number of conspiracy theorists, for instance, is not growing in the United States. But if you look at the way the media goes into this whole idea of conspiracy theorists, it would appear as if their numbers are growing and growing and growing.
Right.
That's inaccurate. Go to the business model. The business model is for social media is to connect these deranged individuals with other deranged individuals, and to increase the social media engagement of the deranged individuals so that they engage more with each other. And these are behaviors that the social media market to advertisers.
Let me go back to Paul. Paul, what else do you want to say? Paul, do we have you?
Oh yeah, I'm okay. Still here.
Yeah.
And no, I like that analysis, Larry. I think you're spot on. And you know, that's one of the things that this whole deal with Elon Musk and how he wants to try and open up Twitter, what you just described is exactly the danger with that. And you know, he could scream free speech all he wants, but it's actually dangerous when you have total free speech like that, where you could have dangerous people putting out dangerous ideas and misinformation and lies.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call. Let's get a response from Larry.
Yeah, and what Paul is bringing up is exactly on target, because essentially it is their business model to do so. Their business DNA is to increase that interaction, and they can do it because the technology has reduced the costs of finding these people to zero. So a deranged person can find another deranged person at a zero cost, and that's the first time in human history that that is possible. And we haven't come to grips with how to regulate that.
Always a good conversation. Dr. Larry Martinez, governor of New York, wants to crack down on social media after the shootings in Buffalo. Larry's explaining the challenges that she and others would face. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. On the Stolberg line, we have a listener suggesting that they know hate speech when they hear it, and they appreciate the chance to hear it because they can judge for themselves. I don't know if it's that simple, Larry. Would we all agree about what hate speech is?
Well, it's like saying what's pornography, and remember the famous retort by the Supreme Court justice: "I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it."
Yeah.
And so, hate speech is very problematical because it's so dependent on the context and the individuals uttering it. And so it really is something you cannot just out of the cold just define in some clean fashion, because it's so dependent on the context in which it's being communicated. And you have to look at who is the audience. Are you talking about an audience of 12-year-olds? Or are you talking about an audience of 35-year-olds? You know, it makes a huge, huge difference.
All right. We are in conversation. Dr. Larry Martinez back for a final segment. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. I want to remind you that we have a very important segment on Thursday. Dr. Renee Bravo, one of the most respected members of this community, is going to spend the 5 o'clock hour with us on Thursday talking about this whole baby formula controversy and urging parents to be very, very cautious as to how they will respond. I urge you to do appointment radio with us Thursday at 5:05 for our conversation with Dr. Bravo. Stu Jenkins, candidate for County Clerk Recorder, joins us Friday at 5. If you've missed these candidate interviews, all the ones we've conducted so far are available online at 920kvec.com. We are in our final segment with Dr. Larry Martinez, looking at the call for action to impose any kind of restrictions or to hold social media accountable after these tragic shootings in Buffalo. If you want in on the conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. Larry, on the Stolberg text line, a listener is asking you to suggest possible reforms. What might work?
Yeah, again, it has to go back then to the business model. These are for-profit private companies. They want to, just like all private enterprises, they want to maximize their profit, maximize the value of the stock to their shareholders. They are specifically exempted from the normal liability that every other publisher faces. So, for instance, if you compare a newspaper has a limited amount of space. It chooses very, very carefully which letters to the editor it decides then to print. A newspaper is liable for those letters to the editor. If it knowingly publishes a letter to the editor that defames someone, that presents false information that the newspaper knew was false, they can be held liable. The same with advertisements. A newspaper can refuse to run an advertisement that they know is knowingly false, that violates laws, and so forth. The social media are making billions and billions and billions of dollars in the safe harbor created by Section 230, which exempts them from liability. So whatever somebody says on Facebook or Twitter or whatever platform you want to talk about, that platform cannot be held liable for what a user of the platform publishes. So imagine social media are like a limitless newspaper. In other words, a newspaper that has no limitation on space, and you can publish all the letters to the editor. Why not regulate social media the same way we regulate publishers?
Let's take a call. We've got Bob with us on KVEC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dr. Martinez.
Hi, Bob.
Larry, I'm just curious. When we have groups of people that get together and they want to share hate speech or whatever, it's innocuous, you know, to a degree. But when we have individuals who give out detailed planning of what it is they're going to do because they're going to take action and actually go out and kill people, shouldn't the companies that allow this on their platforms be held liable? And if a person does what this gentleman did and goes out and kills people and the company doesn't shut him down quick enough, I just don't see how they cannot be held liable for this. Do you know if the FBI monitors stuff like this, since it is state, you know, across the entire nation? The FBI would be involved as a law enforcement agency for this?
They must be involved somehow, Larry.
Yeah, but the Section 230 exempts the social media platforms from liability for that. It's Section 230. It was put there in the 1990s to promote the growth of these new technology platforms. Those technology companies are now huge, giant companies. They don't need protection anymore. And it comes down to
are we going to require them to moderate their content that costs money? You have to hire the moderators, just like a newspaper or a magazine or a TV station or a radio station. They have to moderate that content. They have to make sure that it does not put that media company into a liability problem. Shouldn't social media be regulated like every other publisher?
Yeah, Bob, what else?
Yeah, how many times over is Zuckerberg a billionaire? I mean, I don't care if it costs them money. This is hurting our society. We need this regulation. They need to be held accountable. We need to get people in Congress who are willing to repeal that Section 230 so we can have some teeth and prevent future tragedies like this.
Yeah, and to the way to reform this is it's going to cost Facebook money. They have to hire more people to moderate these conversations that are taking place to ensure that the technology filters that you have are going to be imperfect, because people can get around those, but a human being is far more perceptive of these tricks that these groups could use that facilitate these groups being able to organize. They can find each other at zero cost. And this is something that's revolutionary, and our legal and political system has not caught up yet with it.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. On the Stolberg line, are social media companies a platform or a publisher?
They are essentially both. The question is, should we now revoke Section 230 and regulate them as every other publisher? That is to say, just like a newspaper or magazine publishing letters to the editor, that's essentially what is happening, in my view, of what a possible reform could look like, is Facebook is a publisher, and when somebody posts on Facebook, it is Facebook saying, this is a letter to the editor. They want to talk to the other users on the platform. Will we allow this message to be published, or will it put us into a liability squeeze somewhere?
Listener on the Stolberg line, there should be a one-hour delay before any social media company can post something online, thereby allowing for careful review of information.
That would be, I think, one of the reforms that should be very seriously considered. Yes. In addition, you could look at, for instance, what about the liability of the social media platforms in pushing some of these crypto stocks that have crashed recently, destroying people's fortunes, and yet these platforms are not held to the same standards as other publishers. And I think that once you start organizing user groups on your platform for financial stock investment conversations, I think you ought to be regulated.
All right, at the two-minute mark, Craig, you have a question.
To the idea of whether it's a platform or publisher, if it is a platform, why are they editing content like a publisher? And if they are a publisher, why are they receiving 230 protection that's meant for platforms?
Yeah, very good question, Craig, because of the political pressure now, because people now are so upset by the social media platforms that they are attempting to put a better face forward. And, for instance, you see full page ads where Facebook talks about its public service, even as they rake in billions and billions of dollars over radicalization. For instance, this started years ago. These social media platforms were the main means for ISIS recruiting fighters.
1 minute.
You have in essence a repeat of history, where you have the social media platforms
being protected by the safe harbor provisions of Section 230 and not being forced to really face the full, let's say, legal consequences of their actions.
Final text on the Stolberg line. Suzanne is saying thank you for the segment. This is so informational. Great show. Suzanne, you're more than welcome. Thanks for listening. Dr. Larry Martinez, another fine job. We wish you safe travels. You're going to be gone for a few weeks over in Europe, traveling and going to conferences. And when you come back, you're going to give us an update on everything you learned in Europe. 20 seconds for a final thought, Larry.
I would urge everyone to follow very closely the Section 230 debate, and I'll be talking in Europe about the cyber challenge to outer space satellites and Elon Musk's Starlink system.
All right, sir.
There you go.
Is Elon, yes or no? Elon Musk, is that deal going to go through? Yes or no?
No, it will not go through.
All right, Larry, thank you. Great show today. Thanks for being part of it. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help. We will see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.